Good morning and welcome to Coffee with the Coder for Monday, April the 24th. As we were just mentioning, this is episode 10. Very excited to have you all here with us today and looking forward to answering your toughest questions. Well, they may not be tough, but sometimes they really are, and we're struggling often to figure out where to get those answers. And so you can just go on over to aq-iq.com or smarter.aq-iq.com and go for Coffee with the Coder and send in your question. So, good morning, Paula. I'm ready to talk this first question for you.
Oh, good morning, Pam. Before we go into that first question, would you mind telling people, I spoke about it a little bit on our last visit together, but would you mind telling people what we are so excited that we are starting today and we've already drawn our first winner?
Yes, yes, I'm so excited because we just got it into the office on Friday afternoon late. We have a official Coffee with the Coder mug, and it's branded on both sides. We can't wait to share with you the picture that's on it. So look for the replay of this episode on the website this afternoon. But what we're going to do is every other Monday when we have Coffee with the Coder, we're going to put the names of the people whose questions we're addressing into a hat. And then we'll just draw one out. And so on the days when the only one question is answered, why, guess what? You're going to be the winner. But we have more than one question today, and we had a drawing, and we will tell you who the winner is this afternoon, as soon as we finish. And that mug will go in the mail to that winner today. So I'm excited about that. We are going to mug you by sending you a mug, and we're going to ask you to mug it up and send us a selfie if you're okay with that. You can send it to me or you can post it on our Facebook page. So are we ready to get into this first question?
Yes, yes, Pam. I just wanted everyone to hear about that because I was so excited because we just love those little mugs. And hopefully, if you can post that selfie on aqiq.com or send it to Pam and she'll post it. If you are okay with that, we just want to share with everybody.
Yes.
So, yeah, go ahead with that first question.
Okay, so the first question came from Irv, and Rebecca is asking. She says, during a recent webinar, the speaker gave a scenario about a patient being admitted into inpatient rehab with a CVA with hemiplegia. She said to code both the CVA and the hemiplegia on the IRF. Now, when we asked about this, someone asked about this, she said that several years ago, CMS stated it was okay to code both. Also, we looked on her company website, and a moderator gave the same instruction. Now, we've been instructed that hemiplegia is not to be coded on the IRF since it's included in the IGC. Both the IRF-PI training manual and the AHIMA coding for IRF webinar confirm that hemiparesis is not to be coded on the IRF. So can you address this for us, please?
Oh, sure, sure, Rebecca. You always challenge me. I know Rebecca. She works at one of the facilities that I've known for a while, and you always challenge me with your questions, Rebecca, so thank you for that question. Basically, and this is based on my research regarding reporting hemiplegia as a comorbidity on the IRF-PI, we are not talking about the UB04 here because, of course, in most instances, when the patient comes into an inpatient rehab facility setting and you are coding that principal diagnosis on the UB04, most of the time that condition is hemiplegia due to that CVA. Now, not always, but most of the time that's what you'll see as your principal. However, on the IRF-PI, and Rebecca, I do agree with you 100%, but I'm going to tell you the caveat just like the other person who was presenting indicated. The CMS IRF-PI manual, as you stated, does indicate that conditions that are included in the impairment group code or the IGC are not reported on the IRF-PI. So, however, if you report that hemiplegia, I tell people when I'm doing audits on IRF coding that it really is kind of a so what, because your impairment group says, right body, left brain, left body, right brain, bilateral involvement, and it tells that impairment group, so when you tells what's going on with that patient and what side is impacted. However, if you report the hemiplegia, you're just telling what you've already told in the impairment group. It doesn't change your reimbursement. It doesn't help you to stay in a 60% category when we're talking about strokes being the reason for admission. I want to be very clear about that, because when you have a patient in another category, another impairment group category, that hemiplegia may qualify you as a 60% case. So bottom line, when they're coming in for a CVA, hemiplegia is not necessary to report as a comorbidity. I think across the country, so many facilities and so many coders and IRFPI or CMG coordinators want to tell, they don't want to leave anything off. Just like, you know, reporting malaise or fatigue or gait dysfunction as a comorbidity. Those are typically symptoms of other diagnoses we already report. Or if there's a condition, again, that's included in that IGC, then we don't necessarily need to report it as a comorbidity. However, like I said, it doesn't impact your reimbursement and it doesn't impact your 60%, and that's why likely CMS says, well, if you want to, just throw it on there, and why the other speaker or presenter also probably said the same thing, because it doesn't impact anything when you are talking. And I want to be very clear and underscore this. It's only when you're talking about the patient's reason for admission being a new acute stroke. Because sometimes we have situations where the patient's reason for admission is the residual. Maybe they didn't have a new acute stroke, but they had residuals from a former stroke that have been exacerbated by an illness, in which case that hemiplegia may be reported as the etiologic diagnosis. And again, this is all on the IRFPI, so I want to be very clearly, there's a differentiation between what we report on the IRFPI and what we report on the UB04 claim form, particularly when you're talking about stroke patients. Pam?
Thank you. That was pretty involved. You know, it always has to do with which document you're coding, right?
That's right. Okay. Absolutely. And what level of service, you know, are you inpatient, outpatient? There's so many different rules based on, you know, where the patient's at and, you know, any kind of specific documents like an IRF that are required.
Absolutely. Okay, so let's look at a question from Jackie. I'm not sure if she's with the hospital or the physician office because she mentions both in her question. Will the hospital CPT codes always match the physician CPT codes in the outpatient setting?
Oh, wow, Jackie, that one is another challenging one. Actually, no. Many occasions they will, but not always, because there are different rules for hospital versus physician. And the thing that comes to my mind right off the bat is, you know, the E&M codes, because the hospital, when you're talking about an outpatient setting, the hospital E&M codes, they set their own criteria for those E&M codes. So if the patient's in observation or in a emergency department, then the physician is required to use. There's also some surgical cases where the codes would differ. So if you wanted to send in a specific case, Jackie, and ask us to look at it, you know, we're happy to do that and see if there is, you know, differentiation in the case that you're concerned about. Perhaps there's, you know, a common case that you're seeing, and where if you're in the physician office, you're getting different codes from the hospital, or if you're in the hospital and you're getting, you know, seeing that the physicians are reporting something different, send it in and we'll take a look at it and see if we can respond to that for you.
Wonderful. Thank you. Okay, so now I'm going to pop back over to the IRF setting. I had quite a volume of IRF questions this week. This one's from Anna, and she's asking for clarification, she and her coordinator, and this is the scenario. A patient has a femoral neck fracture, which was replaced by joint replacement, and she coded the fracture as the principal, and then after the discharge, the code V96641 fracture was replaced and no longer present. So her principal is S72001A, and someone is requesting to add S72001D for David. Now, by coding clinic, if the replacement is done by, I believe she's, this is an acronym, I don't know, THR, assigning the code for fracture as principal and then assigning the code for the presence of an artificial hip joint. Please advise.
Yeah, that, Pam, that was total hip arthroplasty. So what she's saying, I believe the question is, and she's talking about coding for the UB04 claim form because she's using the term principal diagnosis, and she's said that she reported the principal diagnosis. It looks like as she's asking whether she should report it as the initial care for a fracture or whether she should report it as, looks like that she said the discharge code of the aftercare or the hip replacement code, the Z code for the hip replacement, I think, is what she's asking. So my response to that, and let me be very clear, the seventh character A, when you have a patient who is coming in for an injury or a such as a fracture, then ICD-10 always directs you to use those seventh characters for either initial encounter or subsequent encounter, or if something else fits, such as malunion or nonunion, to use those rather than the aftercare for the surgical condition. So rather than those Z codes, this is an ICD-10 guideline. So the aftercare Z codes should not be used for aftercare of conditions such as injuries or poisonings where the seventh character is provided to identify subsequent care. So in this case, on the UB04 claim form, and for this IRF encounter, you would report the fracture with a seventh character of D for subsequent care. However, on the IRF PI, and I'm just going to clarify this, on the IRF PI, the reason that caused the need for the admission, the reason that caused the impairment was the acute fracture, and it's still considered, according to CMS, the initial episode of care when the patient transfers over from acute care to the rehab facility, and that etiologic diagnosis would end with a seventh character of A. So hopefully I was clear on that, Pam. And if there's any questions still and I wasn't quite clear enough, please send it again and say, hey, Paula, could you clarify a little bit more about those aftercare codes versus the seventh characters? And we'll get that for you.
Thank you. Absolutely. Yes, and we appreciate all of that depth there. That's wonderful. And we are running out of time. It's 10:22, so now I'm going to announce the winner of today. The very first official Coffee with Decoder mug is going to Rebecca from Birmingham. So we're going to get that out in the mail to you today, Rebecca, and please mug it up and share that with us if you don't mind. So we look forward to having all of you to join us again in 2 weeks. On, let's see, 2 weeks will be May the 8th at 10:10. Thank you so much.